Right. Well, we're going to talk a little more about our influence and our communication with our neighbors. We were almost finished with that one. Because we were talking on page 66 about wandering from house to house and the dangers inherent in that. Now, you know, I told you I said I was going to do better about meeting my neighbors and getting to know them. And there's a lady walking in. And our street's a horseshoe street, so there's really no reason for anybody to be there that doesn't live there or delivering pizza. So there's this lady walking down the street. She's got a stroller. She's got to live on my street, or there's no reason for her to be there. And I was kind of known. And so I just waited by the mailbox till she got to me. And we visited for a few minutes, and I told her, see, I made a commitment to her. I said, when the weather gets nice, we're going to have a barbecue. We're going to invite all the neighbors. So now I've put it out there. So now I've got to do it. But I did know everybody on that street when my kids were growing up, because they all had young kids, and we, you know, it was a very tightly knit area. But as kids grew up, parents didn't need that much house, and they moved away. And so there's, I don't know many of those people anymore. Consequently, I can't have any kind of an influence on them. I don't know them. They don't know who I am. So I'm going to do better at that. On the top of page 67, it says, Paul gives a very vivid description of the neighborhood gossip in 1 Timothy 5:13 when he describes women who are idle, wandering about from house to house. And not only idle, but tattlers also, in busybodies, speaking things which they ought not. There are a lot of verses we know about idleness. What's the biggest problem if you're idle? What do you think? This could be a million answers to that, but what do you think?
I don't know. I've never been idle.
I believe that. Grew up with her. I believe it. It allows you time to just get into things you don't need to get into. And maybe there are people in this world who really legitimately have idle time. I would doubt it's any of us in this room. Since we don't have servants, since we don't have cooks, since we don't have chauffeurs, and I doubt that there are any of us who could really say, I have a lot of significant, real idle time. Now, not saying that we shouldn't ever just take time to be still, to rest. The Bible talks about that, how you have to recharge yourself. But those people who ignore the legitimate work that needs to be done so that they can go from house to house and tell tales, that's a problem. It's going to be a problem for them. It's going to be a problem for their neighbors. It's going to be a problem for their family. Because if you have that much spare time in our society at our level, who we are here, my guess is you're not doing your job. You're not doing the job God gave you. Because there isn't a lot of legitimately idle time. There is rest time, but those are two different things. Most of the women I know are unable to successfully sit and do nothing. Most of the women I know, when they're resting, or reading, or knitting, or shelling pecans, or whatever it is they're doing, but most of the women in my world don't have time for idleness and don't want it, not looking for it. I personally think time where there's nothing going on, I just want to be asleep, because I don't like that. I don't like to have absolutely nothing going on. So if that's the time of day it is for me, I want to close my eyes and just be out of it. I don't want to sit. And I don't understand. It's not to say that sitting and watching TV is a bad thing. I am a television person. I'm not trying to pretend I'm not. I have it running a lot. But just to sit and watch it, I don't do that well. I don't do that well at all. I listen. It's rattling, you know, but I don't want to just sit down and stare at that thing. It makes me nervous. Get a fold clothes or shelf pecans. I do needlework if I could see anymore. I've got to find a better magnifier. I can't see what I'm doing. The Proverbs that says in Proverbs 14:12, halfway down this page or a third of the way. There's a way which seemeth right unto a man, but the ends thereof are the ways of death. I think it's such a dangerous slope when we say, well, I know that it tells us to do this, this, or it be in the Bible, but I just think that, you know, stop yourself right there. Stop yourself right there. When you're trying to decide how to interpret a scripture by resting it, and we have scriptures that tell us, be careful of resting the scriptures to make them be what we want them to be. Because just like with, you know, they say you can prove anything with statistics, and you can. You can report statistics out any way you want to report them and come up with the answer that you want. And there are people that want to do that with the Bible. They want to find a scripture that they can turn around to make it be what they want it to be. And you need to be really, really careful, because the way that seems right to the man is the way of death. Because it's a really simple book to understand for the most part. There are complicated scriptures. But the book in its entirety, I think, is very straightforward, very easy to understand. Not to say that we can't get into in-depth studies of some things that are more difficult, but the overall concept of God created us, He gave us rules, laws, a pattern for how we're to live, and we need to find out what those are. That's a pretty simple concept. He sent His Son so that we can have salvation, redemption, eternal life. There's nothing hard about that. But we can make it seem hard when we try to make it be what we want it to be.
Sometimes we also put scriptures more into them than is there. Some of them are so simple and so simplistic to understand. Put a lot of little scriptures trying to, I don't know what they're trying to do.
Well, I think
mean more than it does mean.
I think some people think they're more sophisticated if they can do that.
Oh, okay.
That's what I think. Her examples. To spank or not to spank is just one of the many areas where we can give a sigh of relief and forget all about the conflicting viewpoints and simply have faith that God knows best. Yeah, but this sentence was written in the 70s, and it's more complicated today. You know, there are several countries in the world, Sweden's one of them, that has outlawed spanking. It's illegal. You can go to jail if you spank your child. So, and that's not the only one. I just can't remember the others right now. And that legislation floats around every now and then here in the U.S. And maybe we kind of think, you know, how silly. But what it is an affront to God's Word. And if they'll legislate out that piece, there are many other pieces they've already legislated out. Abortion, gay rights. Those aren't scriptural things. Those aren't things God said this is okay. But the law turned around and said, yeah, it's alright. I was reading about some woman the other day who's, if this one makes more sense to me, but it's rare to find it. She's pro-choice, so you can kill the babies. But she's also in favor of the death penalty. And not too many of those pro-choice people will do that, although those two are legitimately tied together. If it's okay to kill an unborn child, it's okay to kill someone who's broken the law in a way that the law states that's the punishment. But you just don't find those two linked very often. God warned us. Let's see. She says, we've all observed undisciplined children in stores or restaurants causing their mother great embarrassment. The more the mother tries to sweetly reason, the more unsweet and unreasonable the child became. God warned us. He said, the rod and reproof give wisdom, but a child left to himself bringeth his mother shame. Why would that be? I mean, God told us that, but...
Just a minute. I think we might be a little lost. Where are you?
Did I flip?
I'm sorry.
I flipped.
Where are you?
I flipped.
Okay.
I'm sorry. It made sense to me while we were talking about neighbors, though, and how we look at other people's children.
Yeah, I think the next chapter kind of
That's
follows
why I
this
didn't
real close.
Get it.
Okay.
I should have told y'all, I didn't get any sleep last night.
Oh.
And I told Roger on the way in, I said, I feel very, very dull. So y'all may have to take over. Apparently, you're going to have to take over. Stan, edit that. I'm sorry. But it was making sense to me because we were talking about wandering from house to house and other people's children. So let's follow through with that just a little bit. We are still on page 67, by the way.
Okay.
What do you do when other people's children are in your home and misbehaving? The parents are there.
You correct them.
Yes.
Because my rule might not be their rule.
Have you had
sleep
that happen?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
You had that happen?
Yeah.
We had some people over and they just did not pay attention to what their children were doing. Now, you know, I have kids in my house a lot and I like kids in my house. These kids were running amok. And the parents, one time the mom did say, oh, you mustn't do that. And I'm thinking, pick that child up, put her beside you, yeah, and keep her from doing that to my stuff.
Yeah.
You know, and in my own home, when my kids were little, I child-proofed it because I didn't want to spend my whole day going, don't. But in my home now, I don't have to do that. So I expect whoever brings their kids over to keep them out of the stuff. I'll put away anything that might cut them or poison them, but, you know, other than that. Anyway, so I'm really sorry. I feel bad that I flipped over there and got all confused. Are we ever guilty of accusing her children of being brats, out of control, don't pay any attention to their parents? And ours are just, well, they were a little annoying today, or they were naughty today. Is it easy to hold that double standard with these children? Yeah. And I think it becomes easy as we age to forget some of what kids do. And I don't want to be that grouchy old woman that kids don't want to be around. But it's easier to become that way because you kind of forget, you know, what really happens when somebody's 3 or 7 or whatever. Who's laughing about it? Mary, do you have a story?
No, we just had first-hand experience.
My old great-grandson, they were all there Friday, Thursday night, and we went upstairs, and he was playing. Well, he went over, and he banged, and he had this dinosaur, and he banged on the top of it was a train set. And I said, you know, and he went over to Lindsay, you know, and looked at me like I had... You know,
how dare she?
No, not used to that.
Yeah.
They don't, yeah. They just say, you know, they seem to
ignore.
Yeah.
Well, and
he's not bad, but he's, you know.
I think as we've had the experience of children, we see some things that we wish younger parents would do because we know what the outcome's going to be.
Yeah.
Because we've been there, done that. So,
it's hard. And they do understand, though.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because they'll say it back to you quite easily.
That hasn't happened yet.
But, you know, I've worked with little kids for so long, it's just so automatic to me. Like the other day, a couple of little children were running in the building, and I was close at hand. I just put out my hand on top of one of them. I said, don't run in the building.
Yeah.
And I thought, where's the parents? They're going to eat me alive.
Well, I'm like you. I'm not going to let them run in the building because... A, their parent probably isn't there to see it,
well,
and they would stop them. And it's dangerous. We have too many people here who could be really harmed if they got knocked down by a child. So.
And the little child, one of them came back later and shook my hand.
Well, I don't think they mind.
Well,
I
don't think they mind if you tell them.
If you're just asking them to do something different.
Somebody might get hurt.
On page 67, she says, if only I'd known... She says, if you've ever watched any of the daytime soap operas, which I don't, so I don't find that a very good illustration, but in any of these television shows, in plays, in any kind of fiction, movies, books, part of the problem is I know something and you don't know what I know, and therefore I'm looking at it a different way than you're looking at it. You know, it's not necessarily that somebody's keeping secrets, but that just... the events have happened over here. This person doesn't know the events, and so you've got conflict and misunderstanding. So, you know, what What can we do? I've told you about my neighbors, my next door neighbors, that I love dearly, and they have this horrible house. But I know some things about why that situation is, and so I think it's less annoying to me than to some of the other people on the block who don't know the background, they don't know the history, they don't know what's going on. And that's one of the examples. They're talking something about an eyesore, and he says the neighbor resented it. What was it they parked up there? Oh yeah, the motorhome. And then he said, I'm never going to move that thing because they made such a deal about it. Well, that's wrong on both sides. And if somebody had just, did I tell you about having the sailboat on my street? That was a thing. There was I have some neighbors who have kind of a cutout from the street that's their parking, and they had a sailboat, a really big, beautiful sailboat, and it was parked out in front of the house for, I don't know, a week. They were trying to change the slip where they were keeping it or whatever. And some of the neighbors just got on this huge petition and called the city, and I'm thinking, well, first of all, I think it adds a little class to the neighborhood. We've got this big, beautiful sailboat out there. But secondly, they didn't bother to find out, are you planning to keep this here forever? It was a temporary situation. Wherever they had stored it before wasn't working out, and they were trying to find another place to store it. So, you know, if you just can't, if you can just think of working something out as opposed to, I want my way. I know we had a camper one time, and we had it parked in front of our house as we were getting ready for a trip. And I don't know, I think there is a regulation. You're only supposed to keep them, you have to keep them back from the house a certain number of, I mean, from the street a certain number of feet and all that. But we had it in the driveway. I'm bringing things in and out. And somebody called the city on us, and we got a ticket for it. And I said, you know, we're getting ready to go on vacation here. This doesn't live here. And if anybody had bothered to stop and think about it, they would have known it didn't live there. Or if they had come to the door and said, you know, the city says you can only keep this here 2 days. What's your plan? Then, because, like I said, we live on this little horseshoe, and I just can't imagine that a city inspector happens to drive down our street. You know, somebody called. And they didn't bother to find out the situation. Well, it made me real mad. I had to work to calm that down because I knew what was going on. And it said if they had bothered to find out, then it would have been okay. So that's what they're talking about here. If we can just not let our personal rage is probably too big a word, annoyance, get hold of us without finding out what's going on, we'll probably have a more peaceful life with our neighbors and be a better influence to them. What good are we going to do our neighbors if we come over screaming and yelling at them? Are they going to say, wow, I want to be a Christian like her. That's what I want to do. You know, we've killed the influence we might have had. Page 68. Leave thy gift at the altar. As Christians, our tendency is to keep problems to ourselves. And that's fine if it's just a slight to us. But if the problem is keeping us from loving our neighbor, or if we suspect that the neighbor's one who's hurt, we have to go get it straightened out. As long as we have hard feelings for someone, we can't worship God acceptably. Pat, would you look up Matthew 5, 23 and 24? While you're finding that, we'll go on. It says the true agape love of the New Testament, which we've talked about a great deal in this class and others, is motivated by our will. We determine. Go ahead, Pat.
Okay. If therefore you bring your gift to the altar and there remember that your brother has something against you, leave your gift there before the altar and go your way. First be reconciled to your brother and then come and offer your gift.
Okay, so we're getting up on Sunday morning and we're real mad at somebody. They did something. They don't know they did it. They don't even know we're mad. But we're harboring whatever this is. And we come to worship God. And our brother's here in the building, the one we're upset with. Are we going to be able to worship acceptably? What did Matthew say?
Straighten it out.
fix it. Difficult thing to do. Very few of us. Yeah, I always smile when the people say, I don't like conflict. Well, you know, the only people who really enjoy conflict have some mental issues. They are not normally developing people, because human nature is such that you don't like conflict in your close personal life. Now, you know, you may want to be a warrior. You may like that kind of conflict. But in your world, most of us seek peace and calm. So if I'm upset with Amy, I probably don't really want to go to her and say, Amy, I'm upset and here's why. Because the first thing that's going to happen is, with most people, they're going to say, well, I didn't do that, or I didn't mean to do that. Or when what we hope, our Christianity, if somebody comes to me, is I'm going to say, I'm so sorry. I didn't know that I hurt you. I didn't mean to hurt you. Or if I did, that was so wrong of me, and I've asked God to forgive me, and I need to ask you to forgive me. Because sometimes our anger takes over, and we do some things we shouldn't do. But even if it's somebody else in our mind has caused a problem, we don't like going to them and saying, here's what's wrong. Here's what I don't like. Because it's difficult to do. Has anybody had an example of one that worked well, that you were able to resolve well? Laura?
I had to talk to a sister about something one time. Man, I literally made myself sick, just crying and crying, approaching them or whatever. When I approached them, it was very, very positive.
Oh, good.
But it was like, I mean, and I didn't do it right away as I should have. I waited days. But I mean, I literally was, I wrote a letter and I handed it to them, and I wanted them to read it in front of me because I was crying when I went to them. The letter had tears all over it. But they were just kind of looked at me, they hugged me, and they responded very positive. But it was like, a lot of times we make something, you know, a mountain out of a molehill.
Right, we make it bigger than it has to be.
And we do that a lot of times. So.
Yeah. One time, an elder's wife had a gossip problem, and I didn't realize how bad it was, because I thought she was just sharing with me as a friend stuff that she was, you know, we all have annoyances at times, and sometimes what we say might border on gossip. So I just dismissed it, because I wasn't going to let it go anywhere, and I wasn't going to do anything with it. I wasn't going to hate the people she was talking about, so I didn't say anything. But as time went on, it became a huge problem in the congregation, and it got so bad that in one class, everybody started talking about a poison in the group, and nobody was saying who the poison was. But just that there was a poison among us, and that it was causing problems, and everybody started crying. It was this big deal. And suddenly, as we're talking afterward, from little things different ones were saying, I realized everybody was talking about the same person.
Mm-hmm.
And
was she there during that session?
No. And so I felt like, oh, you know, I should have said something to this person years ago, but I didn't realize it was a problem mm-hmm. of hers. And I didn't know how to deal with it. It's an elder's wife. You know, this is someone that
she doesn't hold an office.
Well, I understand that, but she's also an older woman. She's someone I respect. It's kind of hard to go to her. It's intimidating. And I couldn't do it at the church building because it was too well known in the group that mm-hmm. there was a problem. And I couldn't do it in, like, a public setting because she might get upset and, you know, didn't want to embarrass her by mm-hmm. being in a public place. Couldn't go to her home. She lived over an hour away, and I had too busy of a schedule. So I thought, what in the world can I do to resolve this problem? And I didn't want to do it over the phone. So I prayed about it and prayed about it and prayed about it. It took me a couple weeks, and I finally wrote her a letter. And I just trembled for days, knowing, you know, she probably got the letter now.
Mm-hmm.
She called me, and when she first called me, I didn't pick up because I thought, there's no way I can't talk to her. I'm just scared to death of what she's going to say. Because she had a little bit of a temper, too. You know, she wasn't perfect, but she was a wonderful lady. And so I was just, like, not knowing what to do and just kept praying. And then she called me again. Well, before she called me again, I listened to the voicemail, and she just begging me to talk to her. When she called again, I picked up. And at first, she was angry. You know, she was hurt. And she had received, turned out, several letters that week. And they weren't all very nice. But we talked, and I told her exactly what, you know, my position was on it and why. because I believed it was God's position, not because it was my position, but I'm saying from my witnessing of what had taken place is what I mean. And what should have been done instead. And she was just, like, once she got it, was like completely humble, sweet, thank you so much for coming to me. And I have to say, she's a different person now. She does not gossip about anybody anymore, you know, but it was something I just don't think she was aware of.
Also sounds like something her husband should have been aware of. As an elder in the congregation, he should have handled his home situation.
I think he might have been aware of it, but didn't know what to do, because sometimes when you're too close...
Right, but that's a real serious problem. Mm-hmm. You've got an elder who is supposed to be guiding the church, and he can't guide his wife. That's a big problem. And it doesn't really matter if it's difficult. He's taken on the job, and, you know... He's got a responsibility. So that would concern me as well. Because he's bound to have known what was going on. Because if she gossiped to you, you know she gossiped to him. So.
And being in her position, she knew things about people because of him, you know, being who he was. She learned by proxy very personal things about people. And that was where the problem was it was getting spread around.
Which is also a problem.
Yes.
That elder.
Not if you have an elder like my husband
that
tells me nothing.
That's what I'm saying. There's a problem.
I don't know if he doesn't trust me.
There's a problem if he is sharing things that he's learned in confidence with his wife.
Actually, he has told me things that he needed to discuss with somebody.
Right.
But hopefully I didn't mishear him.
My dad's been an elder for a long time. He's very close-mouthed. He was an elder once before when I was a kid, and then we went through a period of time when we didn't have any elders. Everybody stepped down but him, so he wasn't an elder anymore. And my friends would say, "What's going on?" I don't know. He sure didn't tell me what's going on. So.
Well, we had a guy talk to our congregation when I was a kid when we were getting ready to have elders, and that was something he said to the women. He said, there's going to be times when your husband's, you know, you're one, and so you expect your husband to share with you like he always has, but when it's about somebody else, he's not obligated to do that. And he said, there have been times when I've told my wife, honey, this is just something you don't need to know.
Yeah.
And he said, you can't get mad at him if he says that to you, because he needs
It's actually a great relief to not be burdened with knowing these issues. Okay. I don't want to know. I want to know anything I need to know that will help Roger deal with what he has to deal with, to support him.
Right.
But I don't want to know what's going on in people's lives. It's not my job. And if I know it, am I supposed to do something? And they haven't told me. So, you know, that's, if someone wants to come to me as a friend and talk about an issue, I'll be happy to talk to them, but I'm not getting it from him, because I don't want to do that. And he doesn't do it, because he didn't talk much anyway. As we have, therefore, opportunity. Now, how often do we have an opportunity?
Daily.
How often do we take advantage of our opportunities? Not as often. Not as often as we should, at least I don't. I'm not going to say you all don't. Maybe you're better at it than I am. When we went to Little Rock over the Christmas holidays when Roger's sister-in-law was so ill, his brother-in-law, for the first time ever, as far as I can tell, wanted to know, told Roger, you want to know about your church. You know, he said, he grew up, I don't know, Methodist for a while, Episcopalian for a while, and, you know, named four or five, and now he's going somewhere and they're real good people, but he said, it's not right. Something's missing. What a glorious opportunity. But of course, he's at the hospital. He was going to go to church with us Sunday morning, and Saturday night she took a turn for the worse, and so we didn't get to do that. But we told some people there at the congregation. Actually, we had gone and found the building on Saturday night, and they had two preachers, and the younger one was there working on some things. So Fritz got to meet him. And when we left, it turned out that one of the members was the head of security at the hospital where the sister-in-law was. So he said, yeah, I'll go by and see him. And then that younger preacher. And I told him flat out, I said, we won't quit, but we're kind of leaving this in your hands because you're here and we're not. And we've never had an opportunity with him before. And as it turns out, I don't know about the young man, the young preacher, I hadn't talked to him, but the guy that was head of security went there twice, and Fritz was very impressed by that, you know, that this man just came to see how his wife was, because we had said she was critically ill. And so we've started sending bulletins and things, and I don't know if anything will come of it, but I know it's an opportunity we've never had before. We could have talked before, but he was never receptive before. So I think this is a nice idea. Why not take that good lesson you worked up for your Bible school class and teach it to the neighborhood children? You know, a lot of people would take advantage of that. I mean, they really would. They might not let you talk to them, but a lot of people are interested in their children being churched. You know, they'll go to vacation Bible schools, and they'll go to this and that. They kind of don't care where it is. You know, it's church. It's a good thing. So there are some opportunities there. And little kids are sponges. They get it. They get it pretty quickly, more so than adults who've got all these things built up to keep them from understanding.
I ran into something interesting once when I was working. The young woman working with me had said that her nieces and nephews go to the Alta Mesa Church of Christ school. I knew that they were Methodist and Catholic, kind of a divided family thing. And she says what they liked about that was, yes, they did teach Bible, but they didn't teach doctrine.
So let's see. We need to define doctrine for her. But what she was saying was they teach the Bible, but they don't teach a creed. Yeah. They don't teach a Baptists believe this, Mormons believe this. They didn't teach that. So that's a good thing. Didn't know what doctrine means, but
yeah.
I have an awkward situation, and maybe some of you would have ideas of how we can get around this. The original owners of our house, we bought a foreclosure, which Mark said he would never do again because you never know what you're getting. We found out after we bought the house, after we moved in, that the original owners were foreclosed on because he had molested one of the girls in the neighborhood, got arrested, was in jail. She couldn't afford the house on her own. Family had split apart. She went to live somewhere else. And so the house was sitting there for about a year. Well, okay, so it's for me to, like, as I was sitting here, I was brainstorming about, well, I could have, like, a mother's hour where moms can go and do shopping and I could, you know, have the kids come in and whatever. But I've got a 14-year-old son. Mm-hmm. And my house now has a reputation. You know, what do? Do you do it anyway?
Yeah. Normal people aren't going to attach anything to a house. The guy's gone.
But people are shy about coming to our house. Like the kids are. Because of what happened. Because they had, like, this, it was happening at a big neighborhood sleepover they were having at the house. Mm-hmm. And so he targeted this one girl, but, you know, now all the neighbor's kids are kind of funny about our house. So
That's like saying there's a ghost because Ms. Smith died in the house. I would ignore that completely. Feel free to jump in if y'all feel differently about it, but I would just ignore it. It's just bricks and mortar. It doesn't have anything to do with... The house can't molest anybody.
Right.
It's bricks and mortar. So y'all may have a different feeling about it. But I wouldn't worry about it a bit. And yes, you have a 14-year-old son, but you're right there while he is. So I would let that go. This little light of mine, she's really talking about being a Christian, letting our light shine on page 69. I don't think this is true. I think it might be the tiniest bit true. The last sentence she has in that paragraph. A Christian should be the very best neighbor on the block. That part's true. If the paint on our house is peeling and making the block look run down, or if we're allowing our dandelions to run wild and ruin the other neighbor's yards, our influence as a Christian is zero. Yeah, I'm not sure that's true. Maybe it's just because I don't keep a very good yard. Maybe I'm just prejudiced.
Could keep our neighbors from talking to us.
It's not true. There was a lady in Rhode Island, the preacher's family there. They had four children and were running ragged all the time. But she knew every neighbor in that street, and they all loved and respected that family, even though their house wasn't painted and their yard wasn't perfect. And, you know, they loved them because they were...
It's our actions.
It was how they treated the neighbors.
I think if you treat the neighborhood with disregard, that can harm your influence.
Yes.
I think if you pile up the trash in the front yard and look like you don't care about where you live, and consequently it does impact other people, I think that can have a negative impact on whether or not somebody's going to want to listen to you. But to say that because yours isn't the perfect house on the block that your influence is zero, I don't think that's true. Now, having said that, I think Christians need to be seen as industrious and part of the community and caring. And so if you look lazy, that's a bad thing for your Christian influence. So, you know, I guess I just don't think it's quite as adamant as she said in here. But I think there are some principles within that, that you obey the law. You know, if the trailer can't sit in front of the house for a month, then it shouldn't sit in front of the house for a month. That's the law. That's what you know, you do what the laws of the community say to do. Mother, you look like you're about to tell me something. I know that look.
Well, I was thinking about the trailer across the street from me that's been there an awful long time. But I would never call it a patient.
Yeah. But do y'all have a setback law on trailers?
It's not supposed to sit in the front. It can sit in the back.
But, like, if it's in your way so you can't back out of your driveway,
then
I think it should be able to go to your neighbor and ask them politely to move it a few feet one way or the other.
And all of those kinds of things. I mean, I would really like for my next door neighbor to clean up their yard. It makes my house look bad. And there are cinder blocks under the fence in an attempt to keep the dog in. And I'm not talking about a cinder block little fence. I'm talking about cinder blocks just thrown in holes and stuff. And it doesn't work because they have a sloped lawn and the dogs just run to the top where the fence is equal to the yard and come over. So, I mean, it really does bother me. It looks trashy, and in my backyard, it looks bad. But is it a big enough deal for me to create hard feelings with my neighbors? It's not. Roger did say he was just going to ask Robert if he could have those. He wants to build a wall down in the yard on the kind of terrace. He said, I just use Robert's cinder blocks. I said, well, you might ought to ask Robert. No, I'll ask him. He said, he didn't care. He's not using them. They don't work anyway. Move over welcome wagon. The Christian needn't be the social director of the block, but neither should she avoid the neighborhood coffees and Tupperware parties. That's not scripture. I don't have to go to a Tupperware party. Just wanted to throw that in. The apostles always went to the Jewish synagogues. Why?
To socialize.
To teach. That's where the people were. So it's not wrong for us to go and be friendly with our neighbors and have an influence and get to know them. And if you always say no every time somebody invites you somewhere, that may be a problem. That really might be a problem. They will stop asking. And you can't possibly know any problems they may be having if you don't know them at all. Let's talk about some of these discussion questions before we get out of here, and we're close to needing to get out of here. In what ways can a Christian woman let her light shine in her neighborhood?
Living a Christian life.
Not screaming at your neighbor's dogs when they bark at you.
Not screaming at your neighbor's dogs. Yes. Not screaming at your neighbor's dogs.
When you're stressed out because your son just dumped the milk and it's spilling all over the driveway and you're trying to clean it up and the dogs won't shut up.
Bring the dogs over. Let them lick it up on the driveway. That's all those problems right there.
I hate those dogs.
Yeah, I understand. I have one at Mother's house that I hate next
door. When you see the distance between us and the house across the street, we're in our own yard up by the door, and they're barking at us.
Well, it's like when my neighbor had 30 cats, and five of them were on my porch all the time.
I had a talk with that dog yesterday as I'm feeding him some Pam Trimmons to not bark at everybody that goes up down my driveway.
He not only barks, he lunges. Oh. And he's a big dog.
Lab, and he looked like he could eat you up and try.
Well, what concerns me about that dog is that he's going to make it over the fence one day and land on you. And you're going to go down, and that's what worries me about that
He'll
dog.
Just do it because he loves her, not because he wants to hurt her.
I don't think he'd try to kill her. He just might without trying.
But I think I could go in his backyard, and he would not hurt me, but he would jump up on me.
Right.
And he's heavy enough to knock me down.
Yeah,
so
no,
once he gets me on the
ground, I don't think he's mean. He's just annoying. Really, really, really annoying.
Next time, don't give him those scraps from him. He sits quietly for you.
Well, he'll never eat.
If a thief comes in, he'll get me to do it.
That's true. Anybody coming through, he'll let you know. Taking food if somebody's ill, offering to pick up their mail if you know them well enough to do that while they're gone. You know, there's so many little things we can do, Laura.
I think just a simple too, like some of my neighbors or whatever. When they pass, you just wave.
Yes.
It's just a very kind gesture. Yes. I mean, you're not making yourself vulnerable or anything like that, but it's just, you're a kind person.
Right.
And it does show it.
And I do think we live in fear more than we used to. And we have kind of this background fear. Well, I don't know them. I can't speak to them. But I sure would hate for that Southern thing to go away, of saying hello to everybody you see.
Well, this is personal experience, but I could never repay all the goodness that's been done for me. So that's who we are.
That's right. That's right.
When I lived in Florida, I was telling Laura this recently, we had homes kind of close together. You know, we had a lot. We didn't have property. And I had noticed the emergency vehicle had come and taken the daughter, and there was an elderly woman there who was 102 or 103 years old that was still in the house. And so after a couple days and I didn't see Diane come home, I went over and said, is there anything I can do to Mrs. Armand? And she said, well, she said, no, I don't think it's so. She said, but, you know, I do have trouble getting out of the house. If you could bring in the mail for me until she gets out of the hospital, that'd be great. I mean, it was no big deal to walk to her little mailbox, which was like a small lot distance, you know, to go get her mail and bring it up to the door for her. And her son, who lived on the other street, called me his angel for doing it. I mean, he was just, because he had his mom, who's 103, she's alone in the house, his sister in a nursing home, his wife has Alzheimer's.
Oh, my.
And he's trying to take care of all these women. And he was overwhelmed. And I didn't think what I was doing was a big deal. It was, to me, the smallest of things to do.
Took something off his list.
You know, but you'd think I hung the moon. He brought me flowers. No. Just, when they sold the house, he's like, pick anything you want. Take it. You've been my angel. And,
well,
you know,
and the other thing was you saw his mother every day.
Mm-hmm. So
she had some social contact. You knew she wasn't lying on the floor injured. So it was more than taking the mail to her. I mean, that was what she saw. But what he saw was somebody helping to take care of his mother. Let's talk just briefly about number 11 on our questions. What does a woman who keeps to herself communicate to her neighbors?
Unfriendly.
Yeah.
Leave me alone.
Leave me alone.
Uncaring.
Uncaring. Maybe she doesn't mean any of those things. Maybe she's just a private person who's shy. And I don't mean you have to change your personality entirely to be a Christian. But maybe if that's who you are and you're a very, very private person or very, very much a loner, you have to work just a little harder to do some of those social interactions that let people know that you're open to talking to them. Because if you don't get to talk to them, how are you going to teach them? Laura?
Growing up on the, you know, I've lived in the same house until I got married or whatever. But there was a lady on our block. I grew up on a wonderful street. All the kids played together. Everybody was very friendly. But there was one lady who, when you walked on the sidewalk in front of her house, she would come to the door and she would scream at you, get off my sidewalk. No. And it was the only for everybody was so kind. But as I think back, we were terrified. I mean, we literally would go to the street and walk. And we were terrified of her. And all I remember about this lady was that she was a mean lady.
Yeah.
But now as an adult, I look back and I'm thinking, what made her like that? I have such a pity for her.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm sure there were other things that made her. But as kids, we were wonderful. There were people on our block. There was an older couple, I remember, we called them Grandma Grace and George, and they were a brother-in-law and a sister-in-law from home, and they took care of one another. And as kids, we would go and we would check in on them. It was a wonderful street. Mm-hmm. She missed out on all this.
Yeah.
She didn't want anything to do with us, and that's all I remember about her. But I'm thinking, she could have had such a fuller life.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't have to be mean. She could have just stayed in her house.
Right.
But it's kind of sad as kids.
Sure.
Kids
could have brightened her life a lot.
I know.
There's nothing like a child to make you forget some of the trivia that's going on, mm-hmm. you know, because they see things differently and they say things differently.
And they have happy spirits.
I mean, just... And somebody should have told her the subtle approach.
Well, the parents would come out now. You know, now this is a public sidewalk. And we weren't doing anything bad to her, but we would walk on the sidewalk in front of her.
She probably swept the sidewalk.
Yeah, so she was uphill.
Well, and I don't want to be that lady. I don't want to be the one that somebody remembers.
I often remembered her, though.
That's why I'm trying not to yell at my neighbor's dogs, because I think I'm being that way.
It's kind of hard sometimes. All right, let's start on chapter 8 next time. And think about the difference. Just before you come in, think about the difference between communicating to your neighbors and communicating to the community. So those are really different things. And I'll try to actually sleep the night before so I won't get off track. Thank you for getting me back on track.